Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Well, welcome in, Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Borgannoni, and I am once again joined by my buddy, Matthew. Best ball isn't just for fantasy, I play golf, Betts.
Well said. Yeah, dude, right before this recording, I got a nice little round of 18 in. It was fun. Shot an 82. That was good. But it's time to talk fantasy, and it's time to talk best ball and DFS, because week one, dude, is coming very, very quickly. We have some preseason this weekend, which I'm excited to sit down and watch a little bit of. But yeah, man, we're here, man. It's football time in August, so I'm so excited for week one right around the corner.
Dude, what a tough life you live. You had to play golf today. You had to do some research about fantasy football. You have to get on the mic and talk about fantasy football. I mean, man, you are just struggling.
It's really rough, dude. I'm going to need a vacation at some point soon. I know I just took one about 2.5 weeks ago, but I'm going to have to put in a time off request here with Andy, Mike, and Jason, probably tomorrow.
It's funny. Once it hits September, it's like the time off is like not possible, really. I mean, I take a little break in October, but other than that, it's just like go time in just a hot second. So if you're joining us, we are glad you're with us. This is DFS for the rest of us. Betts and I get to walk through the process of DFS. This week, we're going to be talking about cash game strategy. And we really want to incorporate, you know, if you're playing DFS for the first time or you're taking it seriously for the first time, I think every single person, one of the first things we can do is admit, like, there's so much room for mistake and just lighting your money on fire. So we want to make sure you don't do that and walk through that with you. But I want to start off with a quick question, Betts, because we've updated our best ball rankings, which have been live on the site, part of the DFS pass. And over the last 2 weeks, you and I have done some updates. We even updated right before recording. And who is a player that you are rising on for best ball? While we have really a couple weeks left, ADPs are changing, we're getting news in camp, but who are a couple players that you have been rising on in best ball?
Yeah, I am rising quite a bit, actually, on Travis Etienne, the first-round running back for the Jaguars out of Clemson. He looks like a guy who could come out and maybe start a little slow, depending if they give James Robinson more work or, you know, Urban Meyer has ties to Carlos Hyde. But the bottom line is he's the best running back on that roster, and there is optimism that he could be used in a three-down skill set. We have to recall the biggest strength that he had coming out of college was his pass-catching ability, and he's electric in the open field. He kind of just feels like this second-half running back who's going to come out and explode down the stretch for our roster. So I've been rising quite a bit on him. He falls to the fifth, sometimes sixth round with the way best ball is going recently. People are just pushing these wide receivers up the board so much, and you're getting these guys in the fifth, sixth round. It feels like such a steal. So I love Travis Etienne at his current value. And then the other one for me, just with the news, with the Ravens, Mark Andrews seems like the last man standing, and I know Sammy Watkins is there too, but I don't know if I can take him too much in best ball. But for me, Mark Andrews looks set to smash, right? I mean, we just had the news, Rashad Bateman requiring surgery on his groin. We know Hollywood Brown has been in and out of the lineup at training camp a bunch with injuries. He's had injuries in the past, so it looks like the target, you know, distribution that once kind of looked like it could be spread across Baltimore pass catchers is kind of getting zoomed in again on Mark Andrews.
I came here to fight you on your pick, but I actually have been drafting both of those guys ahead of ADP recently. With Andrews, I think he's separated himself from that Hawkinson tier where he's moved up a little bit further, especially if you're picking towards the backside of drafts, like, you know, pick 10, 11, 12, he's usually there, and he's usually there in the fifth round where you can, you know, scoop him up. So I agree with Mark Andrews, and I looked this setup recently with ETN. Rookie running backs, all right, if they see 150 carries and 50 receptions, they're a top 15 running back. Like, that's just how it works. And so you look at his workload, and 150 carries isn't crazy to see. 50 receptions for a rookie you know, is a lot, but it's something that we could totally see from ETN. So I love where you can get him. Like you were mentioning, like you're not asking in best ball for him to come out of the gate guns blazing, but we've seen rookie running backs in the second half kind of take over. Last year was J.K. Dobbins, you know, it was DeAndre Swift, it was Jonathan Taylor. Like those rookie running backs were so valuable in best ball because in redraft, you're like, crap, they're not doing it for me. So, yeah, I love that pick. Do you feel like there's a certain structure you need with ETN?
I think he can fit both types. I found him more taking him when I'm going running back in round one and then going like wide receiver three or four picks in a row. And then if he falls into like round six, it's a smash every time as your RB2. But I also think you could argue, you know, if you go wide receiver early and you take a couple of the elite guys, you know, maybe you're going like Diggs and then AJ Brown to start, you know, round three, round four, all the wide receivers are there. So you do that again, you have a strong, steady group of wide receivers. You almost do the opposite of what we were doing last year, where you were like, all right, I'm only going to take a few running backs, and then I'm just going to hammer a wide receiver. Well, if you take the elite wide receivers early, you're basically counting on them to have great seasons. And you draft as if you're correct. And if you do that, you don't need as many wide receivers as you would have last year. And so for me, he fits that bill basically, where you're like, okay, I'm going to take him as my RB1 when he falls into the fifth round, and I'm just going to kind of hammer these guys that people are just pushing down the board into the fifth, sixth, seventh round at running back, because man, he is just screams upside. And I actually think their offense can be kind of good and actually kind of fun for fantasy. So I'm excited about the Jaguars this year.
I'll throw two quick names. Marquez Callaway, wide receiver for the Saints. He's basically the only body they have right now at wide receiver. And you can get him about around pick 150, where maybe 3 weeks ago, like you'd get him in 180, 190. So the value is not there as much, but hey, all you're asking for him at pick 150 is be my wide receiver 6 or 7 and, you know, give me 3 or 4 usable weeks. And I think that's possible with even more upside if it's there. And then the last person, Baker Mayfield, I've been getting these so-called backdoor Baker Brown stacks. And alliteration
say that five times fast.
I know. Alliteration aside, as a former English teacher, Baker Mayfield still has upside. I think a lot of times we kind of categorize him as we know what he is so far, a couple years into the league, but there's upside because he's so cheap on an offense we know we like. And let's say you do miss out on Odell and Landry. You're probably like, I don't need Baker at all, but you can still get Hooper super late. You can get Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's also somebody who's rising. And I think you can actually get yourself a fair stack. So Baker is somebody as a QB2. If you have an elite quarterback, Baker's kind of hanging around in the back, and I don't mind at all. I know you're super high on the Browns.
Yeah, I think they make a ton of sense. You know, like we talk about these stacks that you want to try to achieve, especially in these tournaments on underdog. And people are always rushing to get the Dallas Cowboys and, of course, the Chiefs, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, the Browns are just hanging out. They've got a top 10 average implied team total, according to Vegas, on a weekly basis. And no one wants the quarterback on a team that's going to be extremely good, and they're going to score a ton of touchdowns last year. They lived in the red zone with Stefanski, so we can expect more of the same here in year two. And like you said, if you don't get Odell, you don't get Jarvis, that's fine. You have plenty of guys sticking around in the back half of the draft that can fit the bill. You know, DPJ, like Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then as well, Austin Hooper is like a tight end too, kind of hangs around late as well.
I've thought about this before, Betts, but I think the word et cetera is one of your favorite words to use. Am I mistaken?
Is it? This is news to me. Maybe it is. I don't know.
I'm going to see if I can get a listener. If you want to do a count for us, keep a spreadsheet. If there's any words that we use. I noticed that I use the word bets because I refer to you, but you like the word et cetera.
You have to use that word though, right? Like that's just what we're talking. So you have to say that.
Okay. Well, I'll come up with a better word than bets to describe you, but yeah, if you got that, if you want to keep a spreadsheet, listeners, track how many times Bet says the word et cetera. Now he's going to think about it, but
I'm never saying it again on the show.
When you give an example, you will finish your statement with and et cetera. So we are glad that you're with us. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Betts is at the fantasy PT point. I'm at Kyle_Borg, and we would love a review. One of our favorite things when we get reviews on iTunes is when people say, I actually got to learn the game and I got to walk through it with you. And so those really help the show out, and we read them and they really matter. So feel free to go on iTunes and review for us. And last thing I'll say is Ultimate Draft Kit Plus, we're continuing to add to this. We're working behind the scenes, And a lot of people are, this is the time of year where they're jumping in. So when week one starts, the price will go up. But right now it is still the lowest you can get. It also comes with the Dynasty Pass, the Draft Analyzers, the Ultimate Draft Kit Plus is the thing to get. But let's get into our main segment.
Straight cash, homie.
Shout out to Randy Moss. Would you call Randy Moss the GOAT or a GOAT? Because Jerry Rice would probably be the GOAT.
Yeah, it's tough. He's up there. It's like those two and Elijah Moore, apparently. Who's the Brian Edwards, the Raiders wide receiver. All those guys apparently are Hall of Fame quality. But yeah, man, he's up there. He's definitely top three for sure. Easy.
I mean, he's totally up there. He's no Terrace Marshall Jr., who
right,
one day we will be talking about. The problem with rookies is you can't really buy their jerseys yet. There's a lot of like knockoff sites. So every single day I check to find some Terrace Marshall Jr. swag. And they only have socks available. Do you feel like I should get Terrace Marshall Jr. socks?
I don't think you shouldn't get them. I'll put it that way.
All right, well, we'll work on that. But this segment and this episode is talking about cash game strategy or straight cash, homie, as our boy Randy Moss once said. So let's talk about cash games and what we mean by that. And if you're someone that's played for a while, you might say, oh, I already understand this. There's a philosophy, I think, behind cash game strategy in terms of contest selection that I think every single person can improve upon. And Betts and I are going to walk through the way to do that. But in terms of cash games, we're saying, is it a contest that pays out at least a third of the field? All right. Usually we think of 50-50s, but it needs to be at least a third of the field, like triple ups. And there's other formats like that. But anything below that is what we would usually deem as a tournament or GPP. But cash games, the main format we usually do is head-to-heads, double ups, 50-50s, and even triple ups if you've ever done that before. The thing we're looking for is the person that finishes first in a cash game lineup usually has the same payout as the bottom person. And the goal is to maximize your floor in a cash game lineup. So Betts, how does somebody maximize their floor for cash games?
Yeah, the best way to do that is, you know, we want high volume players. You know, running backs are going to touch the ball a ton. Wide receivers, who are definitely going to see a ton of targets. You know, things that you feel really confident about when you enter the slate. We're also looking to save, you know, money in terms of value. Like, how can you maximize production in your lineup with fantasy points while also not having to pay up for the QB1, RB1, wide receiver one? Because that just doesn't work, you know, in DraftKings or FanDuel pricing. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. So trying to find point per dollar projections is huge. And then as well, other things that we've talked about already, using correlation, you know, games that have high totals, offenses that we could see really roll, stacking those players, etc. If you want more on, there it is, Kyle. If you want more on stacking, make sure you go check out, I think it was 3 episodes ago, we spent an entire show about how to do that. And we're going to write up some stuff in the DFS Pass for you guys as well. But that is how you elevate your floor in cash.
Yeah, point per dollar projections. Maybe that's something you've heard of before, but that's something that matters so much because median projections don't help you in tournaments. You know, a lot of times when you go to a site or even on Fantasy Footballers, we have the median projections for the week. And there's players like Jarvis Landry that's like, okay, well, you kind of know he has a pretty safe floor. And you can see that in a tournament, those median projections do not help you. So you need to gravitate in a cash game to say who's the strongest point per dollar projections. And usually what's that's going to be is the running backs. Like it's going to be Dalvin Cook or CMC because we know how much they're going to touch the ball. And you look at CMC, it's like, okay, well, 25 points, that seems pretty doable. You may not call that his median, but you would call that like pretty likely that that's possible. And then you divide that by his price. Let's say it's $10,000 on DraftKings. And you can find your point per dollar projections. So it's important to be able to do that for your positions and even your cheap wide receivers, like your $3,000-$4,000 wide receivers, you're taking their price and their median projection and able to do that. So do you think that a lot of people, when they're assembling a cash game lineup, like they don't think through that part?
I think advanced players certainly do. I think a lot of casuals kind of look at just like who's getting the most buzz that week. And they just kind of assume like that has to be the right play. where, you know, we, I think, take a step back and we say, okay, let's look at each position and see where we can kind of really make sure that we're getting value to be able to pay up for the right players, right? In cash, you're talking about spending up, you know, into the top five running backs, probably maybe into like the middle tier wide receivers and like a top quarterback. Like, you want to have safety in your lineup. So you don't want to be like, all right, who's the 5K quarterback that's going to go off this week? It usually doesn't work. We want to be able to try to find the quote-unquote best plays, but at the same time, understanding that we can't just pay up for everyone. So I think looking at it at a value system will allow you to get to those top-tier players and make sure that you're getting the right ones in your lineup, because unfortunately in cash, if you spend up on the wrong players, you're wasting your salary, and if they don't hit that, you know, median projection like you're talking about, oftentimes that's when we see those cash lineups fail.
We want to discuss the philosophy behind cash games, because there's a couple of schools of thought in DFS. Like, either you're a cash game only player, or you're heavy cash, like Betts plays more cash. You're someone that kind of splits it, like me. I might play a little bit more tournaments, but I try to be a little bit closer 50-50. And then there's people on the opposite end of the spectrum, which totally respect, great people in the industry, that say cash games are worthless. Like, they're not worth your time. So, Betts, why do you fall where you do on the spectrum in terms of you personally? And that's the best part about this. It's your money. You guys can do whatever you want with it. But why personally do you tend to play a little bit more cash?
I think for me, cash feels like a way to create an edge over a long period of time. I know when I log into DraftKings on Sunday, because of the way that I play DFS, I'm not looking to win life-changing money in 1 8-hour sitting. I'm looking to, over the course of several months as we go into the playoffs with the DFS Pass and our show here, and as well across multiple seasons, be able to look at a larger sample and know that if my process is correct and I kind of have a really good understanding of as to how to play cash games, I'm going to win way more often than I lose. And don't get me wrong, I definitely lose, but I just know that, like, on a, you know, 16 or 17 game season, I feel pretty confident that we can cash 10, 11 times in that year because we're doing things the right way. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people playing cash that just aren't. And I think that we know that more casual people get into cash games and they make mistakes all the time. So for me, it just feels like an easy way to create leverage against people who don't have as much maybe experience or kind of understand the game. But the understanding is like, hey, I know I'm not going to be the one walking away with a $10,000 check from my cash games. Like, that's just not how I play. So if that's what you're looking for, and totally fine. You know, that's just different in terms of your goals for DFS. And for me, that is not it right now. I'm more looking to kind of win long term and steady over the course of time. And for me, that process has worked really well.
And you can scale your buy-in over time, you know. But for a lot of people that are getting into DFS, they're not able to drop the head-to-heads for $10,000 each. Like, that's just not something in your bankroll
that's like Brooks.
Possible. Yeah, we're not Brooks. We're not somebody that can just write a check and forget. Just like everything, it's not a big deal. So I'm going to come back to this question we asked earlier in the summer, and I think this is a good kind of introspective question for any single person to just put out there. What are your goals with DFS? And it's okay that it's different. Like, I think some people look at players, they see the tweets, they see the, you know, the screenshots, and they go, oh, I want to be this player. And maybe one day you can be the person that wins that huge check. But the biggest goal is just to be able to say, like, I want to actually learn the game right. I want to be able to play and I want to have fun. Like, some people, they just want to throw, you know, $100 this weekend and just throw it in the mix. And some people want to play a little bit more seriously, but whatever it is, whatever your scale is, finding your goals is super important. So for me, I love the cash and I actually like the long haul. Some people think that playing cash is just too time consuming to grind out $45 over the weekend. And maybe that is, like, maybe that's not worth it, but like, I don't know. I also got a lot of entertainment out of $45. Like, there's a lot of that part too. It just depends on your goal and why you're playing. So it is less money. You're not going to be able to see the $10,000 return every single time, but it's another part of the game that you can learn and sharpen yourself. And I actually think it makes me a better tournament player because I'm looking at cash and saying, okay, here's what people are thinking in cash in terms of popular plays. I'm probably going to have a very different lineup in tournaments. So it actually, I think, aids the tournament understanding. Anything else on just goals in general for you?
No, I think that makes sense. And we oftentimes will recommend to people, like, if you're just getting into this for the first time, we feel like cash is just easier to win, right? Like, you're going to lose way more playing tournaments than you will in cash. And that's just the nature of DFS. That's just how things work in these tournaments where it's so top heavy to win. And it feels amazing when you do win those tournaments or you finish in the cashing, you know, spots. But I think if you're new to this, you can gain confidence in the process and then be like, okay, now I have an understanding as to how this works. You know, how to use my salary, how to use game stacks, how to use leverage, etc. And then you can turn into a tournament player and crush it from there. But yeah, for me, I think that's the biggest thing about your goals early on. We want you guys to keep coming back and playing year after year, not get frustrated being like, well, I entered the milli 4 times in a row and it didn't work, so I guess this isn't for me. And we can tell you with cash games, you will put some money in your pocket.
For sure. I mean, part of this is the competition. I know for you, you've spoken about this a bunch. Like, I just like competing against people, and it's hard to do that, especially even this past year with pandemic. It was like, I just couldn't have the same competition, whether it was like outside with, you know, playing sports with other people. Like, this is a way to do this every single week, and it's super fun. So we have a contest each week on DraftKings if you want to be a part of that in terms of a tournament. But let's talk about cash contests and what they do in terms of how they narrow things. So first, they narrow the competition, right? Like, you're not playing against 100,000 people, most likely. You're either down to one opponent, a head-to-head, or a small base where you're just trying to pay out the top 51%. You're also narrowing a ton of variables. There's just a lot of variables when it comes to building the nuts lineup. And if you start with even dollar contests, $5 contests, $10, whatever it is, there's room for you to have error, and that's okay. Like, you want to know that there are variables at play. Every single day on Twitter, you know, I'll get conversations with people that ask me about certain players, and they're so dogmatic about this is what I think about this player that they don't realize that there's so many outcomes for every single player. Like, DeAndre Hopkins, I don't know if you remember this, DeAndre Hopkins had a season where he finished outside the top 30. How is that possible? Like, there are players that just are just incredible Hall of Famers that have entire seasons, not just 1 week, but entire seasons where they're just off. So I think people overestimate, we've talked about this in the forecasting episode, about how right they can be. And so cash kind of limits those variables.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it too. Also, if you recall last year, people were fading DeAndre Hopkins, switching teams in a pandemic year, and we forgot that he's just like one of the best 5 human beings on the planet playing wide receiver and had a great year. So yes, sometimes we don't really know what we're talking about, and that can definitely help narrow the variable like you're describing there. It also narrows the ceiling, right? Like, we talked about that. It's not as much of a payout, and that's just the reality. But that doesn't mean you can't, again, win and put money in your bankroll, because this can be the foundation of the weekly lineups that you're building. And then, like you said, once you have the understanding of cash, and like you, Kyle, I think you're the best person to speak to this. Like, you have a great understanding of, like, this is what I'm looking at in cash. And so now I know how to go and get different in tournaments, because A, we're putting out content for cash games, and B, we're talking about it. And then C, you're setting your own lineup. So you're looking at this from a completely, you know, holistic view, saying, here's where things are in cash, and that's great. I'm going to play these lineups, but I know if I want to get different and really embrace this variance, here's how to get away from these cash lineups. So I think just even having that in your back pocket is an advantage to playing cash games.
The game theory part of DFS is addictive, just to be honest. Like, winning the money is huge, like seeing that in your account. But the game theory each week of saying, okay, I see where this is at. I see where our roster percentages are. I think Dalvin Cook is going to be 40% rostered this week. And so you get to have a conversation with yourself to say, is he a good cash game player or is he a bad tournament player? And you can kind of build a lineup in tournaments that kind of flips the script and says, okay, everybody's flocking to Dalvin Cook. What if this is a Kirk Cousins and Big Irv Smith Jr. game? I don't know, just, you know, Justin Jefferson. Like, that's your stack. And so cash games do help you kind of determine what you think is going to be an overutilized player. But let's talk about contest selection. And for cash games, a lot of people think about them as just 50-50s, and that's what you and I play a lot. But head-to-heads, I think, is something that's kind of underutilized because it's scary at first. Like, you can go in the lobby and you're like, who are these people I'm playing with? Am I about to get jumped in the DraftKings lobby by all these people and their DraftKings crowns?
All these randos in the lobby. Oh, man. That's so funny because I remember feeling the exact same way when I first started posting my head-to-heads. I was like, I hope these people don't just come in and like rip me alive and all of a sudden I'm done with DFS in the first week. So yes, the feeling is real, but I guarantee you it will go away.
If you put this in real life, like DFS obviously is, you know, just phone, app, whatever. If in real life you really met up with these people, like in a giant like conference, like lobby, like, hey, you want to go head-to-head? Dollar? You want to go dollar?
Hey, man, you want to go?
I feel like all of us would be like so intimidated by like, or we really meet these people in real life, be like, oh, you're not intimidating at all. Like you're actually a slob. You live in your mother's basement. but maybe you have way too much time to give to this. But many people realize this aren't just entering head-to-heads once. They're doing it 100 times. So some people post up and they say, I'm going to put 100 head-to-head lineups in there. I'm going to do my one lineup. And what you're doing when you do that is you're reducing your variance. You can have a lineup, the same exact lineup you use in head-to-head. You can use that in a 50-50, and you could end up, instead of being the top 51%, you end up being at 45. And you're like, oh man, you know what? Like I didn't make it in this group. And you could still beat someone in head-to-head because you're playing against one person. So it reduces the variance. I think it's really important if you do play a lot of cash lineups to make sure you mix in some head-to-heads. And it's just fun. Like it's fun to kind of see somebody kind of like in poker, like their cards come out, they turn them over and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to destroy this person. They have a terrible lineup. Or wow, we have six of the same players. It really comes down to me and my, you know, wide receiver three.
Yeah. And I think what we're talking about here with these head-to-heads too, I want to make sure people read the article that's going to be up. It's probably by the time the pod comes out, it's probably in the DFS pass. If not, it will be in the next day or two. But check out, I wrote up an article about easy ways to create an edge in DFS, and it has literally nothing to do with actually setting a lineup. It's just that you can log into DraftKings every day and collect crowns or do these rewards and missions, etc. There you go, number two. And I also put in there, like, create your own head-to-heads. And the reason that I say that is because, like Kyle's saying, there are people that are going to create their own head-to-heads, post them, and then random people will come in and take them, and you have no clue. Is this person a professional DFS player? Is this Joe Schmo down the street? We have no idea. But what you do is when you create your own head-to-head, you can then limit how many times someone takes your action or takes your contest. Let's say you post 100 of them. You don't want the same exact player taking all 100 because then essentially like it's one person and there's so much variance. You want just one person taking each contest that you post. And it sounds a little confusing. I highlighted it in much better detail in the article, so please go check it out. That's how I do my head-to-heads, and I found a lot of success with it, with the understanding like I'm probably not going to win all 50 of these or all 100 of these, but if you win more than you lose, again, you'll be making money that week. So that's kind of how I approach it, and I found it really successful last year.
Once you start increasing your volume and how much you play, let's say you have your one cash game lineup, maybe two, whatever it is, it's pretty critical that head-to-head contests become part of where your bankroll goes, because if it all goes to 50-50, then you're just toast that week. Like it's just, there's no shot of you making it if you have a bad lineup, but head to head, there still is a shot that somebody else did the same thing. And like I said, I love that feeling of it hits lock time and then you see your head to heads and you get to go, oh wow, I really am rooting for three players now because we both have Dalvin Cook or whatnot. And
I will say real quick too, before we move on, Kyle, with head to heads, you will see egregious mistakes. When the cards are flipped, like Kyle's saying, you will all of a sudden look up and be like, wow, he really played, I don't even know, name a bad quarterback. He really played Andy Dalton in week one against the Rams. I don't understand. Like that kind of stuff happens all the time. I'm not saying it's the usual, but it's an easy way that you know people that are kind of entering, maybe you're running $1, $2, $3. People are making mistakes all the time.
But not our listeners. No way.
No, of course not.
It's the field. It is the massive field of people that don't know what they're doing. That's who we're talking about. If you're a first-time listener, I love making fun of the field because they're a nameless, faceless group, and you can point the finger at everyone else when sometimes you are a part of that field of people, but that's what you get to do. And on DraftKings and FanDuel, you can see the experience level of people. So if you see that somebody's got like a star or DraftKings, it has little notches, you know, if you want to face off against them, do it, and it could boost your confidence, but it's also a way to get picked off. So learning those things with head-to-head is super important. But I think where a lot of people make their money and they play long-term is in these single-entry 50-50s and double-ups. So why don't you explain that to the people?
Yeah, if you want to play against me this year, that's where I'm going to be living. You know, people will make fun of me for not spending a lot more of my bankroll on these like huge tournaments, but I just feel confident in these games, right? It's massive, massive fields. Like we're talking, you know, 4,000, 5,000, 3,000 people. Week one specifically, there's a bunch already posted. We're looking at like 2,800 entrants, 3,500, almost 5,000 entrants, these double ups. And they're like $50, $25. They have them at 10, 5, $2 if you want to go down that low. But basically what you're saying is I'm going to put in $25 into this contest and I'm trying to double it exactly as the name says. I want to walk away from this with an extra $25 in my account. Essentially, you take home 50. And all you have to do is you have to finish better than half the people in this contest. There are going to be so many people in these contests that when they see it, they see the little G on DraftKings and they think, okay, this is a guaranteed contest. You know, if they're an amateur, they log in, they're like, there's 4,000 people. Like, I obviously can't just play the best players. Like, I should probably get different somehow. But again, this is a cash game lineup. We just want to be better than half the people playing. And I have found that to be by far, looking back across the data that I've tracked, for me, just the most beneficial and most, I guess, easy way to build my bankroll early. And especially if you're new to this, to me, that is going to be the way that you build your bankroll this year for sure.
And a little pro tip, this is something that I wish I would have done earlier. I would make sure that you put your cash game lineup, if you're using just one lineup across 50-50s, double ups, whatnot, put just one of those in a tournament, okay? Because the worst thing is when you have a really good cash lineup and you're like, oh, I wish I would have entered this into a GPP and you do really well. So stupid cheap, you know, a dollar, whatever it is, but make sure you at least have one of those lineups also in a tournament, and you could see how well you do. But look for overlay. It's not as common on places like DraftKings. There's other smaller sites that you can find that. But we talked last episode about rake and about overlay, and that's just a part that the public doesn't understand, is that DraftKings is making money off every single contest, or else it doesn't matter. And if it doesn't fill up, then they have to pay it. So those are the ones that you really want to look for. You'll find that more later on in the season as people lose interest and people just don't join as much. But the last thing we want to mention before we're going to play a game, Betts, is how to carry a long-term mindset. And a lot of times with cash and DFS and life in general, we want the quick payout. But having a long-term mindset is so important to be able to withstand really bad weeks, or as Jason says, withstand victories. Like, you are going to have weeks where you are crushed because you really believed in a player. I don't know, like Adrian Peterson. Who would do that, Betts? Who would believe in Adrian? Really old Adrian.
4,500 last year that one week.
There is a week, just real talk, where I toyed with my lineup the whole week, and Adrian Peterson was not a part of my process the entire week. Like, I did not put him in my cash game lineup. Just wasn't part of what I wanted to do. And so then on Sunday, of course, in my cash game lineup, I put in, you know, what is he, 34-year-old Adrian Peterson, and he gets like 4 points. It was rough. Now the next 2 weeks, he scored 4 touchdowns. So
of course he did.
I didn't feel bad, but that crushed me because it wasn't part of my process. And then it killed me for the week. But in terms of carrying a long-term mindset, how have you approached cash over the last couple of years that have just, what's been helpful for you to understand?
Yeah, I think for me, again, because of the reason that I play cash, and I think this is why some people should, is that you look at this when you think about, you know, looking back, did I have a successful 2021 DFS season? Well, if you look at just week one or week two, you could be like in the negative to start the year. Like, you could be like, man, this is not going well. But because cash allows us to, again, have that long-term mindset, I'm looking back in like February to see how my year went. I'm not trying to look on a week-to-week basis, because cash takes away, I think, some of the variance that's associated not only with DFS, but football, which we just know is one of the most high variance sports that exists. There's a reason that there's fantasy busts all the time and breakout stars in the double digit rounds that no one saw coming. And I think this allows us to kind of embrace that variance, but also understand that if the process is correct over the long haul, you're going to know that there's going to be bad weeks here or there. You're not going to cash 17 to 17 weeks. Unfortunately, that's just not how it works. But again, if you're cashing more weeks than not and you look back at the end of the year, you're going to be really happy with yourself. You're going to be really happy with the way the season went. And you're going to keep playing, which is what we care about, like having you guys have fun with us this year playing DFS.
And maybe it's just a personality thing, but some people want just give me the picks, let me win the money. They don't have the time. That's totally fine. I just know for me personally, I like carrying something out for a long time. There's an inherent reward that you put in the time and that it actually paid off. So we will have all of our cash picks for DraftKings and FanDuel as part of the Ultimate Draft Kit. So Betts gets to write up the DraftKings one and I get to write up the FanDuel one. And just a reminder, this show will be going to 2 episodes a week starting week one. So we'll be going through the Vegas lines and what we like in terms of salaries and what stands out. And later on in the week, we will talk about some of the games we like to stack, our cash game and tournament picks each week. So Tuesday and Fridays, and just a hot minute when we get to September, we will be talking about that. So yeah, cash picks, we're going to give those to you. We're going to actually share with you guys like at the end of the week, like, hey, here's how my lineup did. And last year, in 17 weeks, I want to say it was somewhere around 11 or 12 weeks that I cashed. You and I were pretty much similar. And that was actually really high. Like if we were to hit 9 or 10, that's a successful season. 11 or 12 is like killing it. So we had a good season last year with cash. And I think that's our bread and butter of this show. And for a lot of listeners, I think you can be successful long-term that way. But let's play a game.
I hate you. You're the worst.
This is what I came here for. Let's do a game. If you're new to the show, I like to spring these on my co-host without him ever knowing. And let's stroll back to a time known as week one last year. And the reason why I want to do this is because we're about to hit week one and there's a lot of groupthink that happens, especially when we have time. Like we've had a lot of time in the offseason. And then even for the salaries on DraftKings, they got released early this year. And so I remember that first day you put out an article that just says, here's all the salaries, here's the players I like. I mean, I saw people that were building full lineups and doing all the stuff on day one, and it can be easy to do that. So last year I went back and looked at week one. So I want to give you some trivia. Let's see if you're really smart or you are the dumbest person on this podcast out of two. You ready?
I like my chances.
All right. Week one from last year. So if you're listening, try to remember week one last year. Maybe it's just all a blur and doesn't really matter. But week one, Josh Jacobs was the RB1. Do you remember that game at all?
Oh, yeah. Smashed against Carolina.
Okay. Josh Jacobs had 35.9 points. And I remember this game, and I remember right after because I traded for him a couple weeks later thinking, man, Josh Jacobs, he's going to be a top five guy. They just need to pass him the ball a little bit more. The Raiders were a good offense second half. They just tanked. All right. My question for you is, who was the most popular running back that week? Was it Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, Christian McCaffrey, or Boston Scott?
Are we talking about most popular play in the Millie Maker?
Correct.
Okay. I remember us talking about Josh Jacobs, so I'm inclined to say him. However, I also remember getting surprise news on Miles Sanders that he was going to miss week one with a hamstring injury. And I think the correct answer here is Boston Scott because it's the automatic plug and play backup running back situation.
That is correct because one of those players is not like the other. Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, CMC, Boston Scott.
Why'd you say it so softly?
He was rostered on 42% of rosters. 42%.
Wow. That's nuts. Who did the Eagles play in week one? I don't even remember last year.
They played Washington.
That's right. And Carson Wentz looked like the MVP for about 1.5 quarters. And then Andy Holloway tweeted something about it. And he was the worst quarterback in football from that point forward. Do you remember that?
Boston? No, I don't remember that part. But I do remember Washington won that game, correct?
Yes.
Boston Scott, 42%. That is insanely high. And we're not here to say that was a good or bad play because, well, obviously, now we get to look at it and say he scored like 8 points and it was bad play for a tournament, at least. But Boston Scott, I was just in a best ball tournament, and this made me laugh so much. But for some reason, I was in a best ball and someone just said, I gotta have Boston Scott on my roster. I need that guy. And they said, you know what? I'm gonna take this guy in the sixth round. So
that is the silliest thing I have heard all week.
Someone literally is flushing their money down the toilet and at least increasing my odds to win that. But yes, if you have any of those egregious, send those to us. We love those screenshots of people in best ball. It's like, oh, like I had someone that took four quarterbacks. Now, who are those quarterbacks? It was Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady, Deshaun Watson.
That's winning the QB position, man. I'll tell you what.
They are definitely winning the QB position. And none of those guys were stacked. That was even crazier. They didn't have any stacks. Anyway.
People are weird, man. People are so weird.
All right. So next question. Week one last year, Davante Adams. Maybe you've heard of him. Davante Adams was the wide receiver one. He had 44.6 DK points. He was also the most popular wide receiver by far in terms of roster percentage. Who was the second most popular player that week? You ready? Was it Terry McLaurin, your boy, DK Metcalf, Hollywood Brown, or DeSean Jackson?
It was DeSean Jackson. He was the cheap wide receiver play. I remember him being like something around 4K. Alshon Jeffrey, I believe, was out. They had a couple other wide receivers. It was like just DeSean Jackson. And people were talking about, I remember entering the season, like in week one, he goes off, but you don't know if he's going to be there at the end of the season. But we just know this is the opportunity in the revenge game against Washington. Yeah, DeSean Jackson.
Are you noticing a theme so far in these questions?
The worst play was the most popular.
Also, what else do they have in common?
Also, the Eagles suck.
That was the main thing I was going for. So yes, DeSean Jackson was the second most popular wide receiver. And once again, this isn't to say good play, bad play. It's going to happen every single week. But week one, there's so much groupthink and it's a chance to get different. Week one, if you're playing in a tournament, get weird. Like just get super weird. And if people are saying Boston Scott is the play, just say, okay, what if Boston Scott is not the play at 42% rostered? All right, couple more for this trivia. The number one tight end that week was Dallas Goedert. He had 27.1 DK points, and he was only rostered at 2.1%. Okay, so kind of a big deal. Who was the most popular tight end that week? Was it George Kittle, Travis Kelce, which I think we would all say, like, okay, those are the two best tight ends going into last year. We would have thought that. Was it Hayden Hurst or was it Zach Ertz?
Now you have me thinking because I'm nervous about these Eagles. I'm trying to think if I remember week one correctly. I mean, Hayden Hurst was like the late round tight end in redraft last year. Everyone was very excited about him. I'm going to go with Hayden Hurst here.
Dude, you got it. I tried to throw in the Zach Ertz just to completely throw you off and say it was three Eagles in a row. But yes, it was Hayden Hurst was by far the most popular tight end and didn't really pay off in a lot of ways, redraft leagues, whatever it was, Hayden Hurst. But Dallas Goedert, 27.1 points was number one, and then Hurst ended up with like 8-9 points. It wasn't that great. All right, I'm going to ask for one more question, and this is also going to be a good moment to kind of expand this question because I think a lot of times we don't do this so well. So in week one, I looked at the Millie Maker winning lineup. What position was the winning flex for the Millie Maker lineup? So it's either running back, wide receiver, or tight end.
I feel like I'm kind of cheating on this because I just looked at this lineup probably a week or two ago, writing an article for the DFS Pass, and I want to say it was a tight end.
It was. It was Dallas Goedert. Yes,
that's right. Dallas, I remember that.
Dallas Goedert was the winning flex, which is wild to think that someone went double tight end and won the Millie Maker. But I have some stats in front of us, and you're really good at talking this out, Betts, but the field as a whole, where do you feel like a lot of people are kind of overvaluing the flex? So obviously with the flex position, you can do whatever you want, but we want points. And a lot of times we almost want safety. So where does the field usually go in terms of their flex position?
Yeah, I would say based off the data and just like what I've seen in lineups I've played against, people are playing running backs a lot in the flex. They, you know, feel more confident about it. people are saying, you know, I have now two stud running backs. How can I get a third that I think is going to go off for 100 yards and a touchdown? I feel like people are playing the flex too much with their running backs.
That is, the field definitely overvalues. So almost 50% of the field that week played running backs in their flex lineup. And for wide receiver, it was about 30, 38%. At tight end, it was barely 10%. So there's where the advantage was in terms of playing Dallas Goedert. Now, a lot of times the tight end's not going to be the right play. We want wide receivers for the most part in our flex. And when I say the most part, like 60% of the time, which may not sound like overwhelming, but it is an advantage on the field because the field's playing it way less. If the field's playing it around 40% and you're doing it 60%, there is an edge at that point. But in terms of DraftKings, why does that matter? Like, why do we care about wide receivers in the flex?
Yeah, the first thing is it's full PPR. And I think anyone that's played any redraft football or DFS understands that PPR elevates wide receivers. It's very obvious. They catch a pass, they get a point. We just know they catch more passes than running backs. So that's step one. Step two is it's a lot easier to find cheaper guys that help you fit your salary at wide receiver that can actually give you weeks that you're looking for. It's hard to find a 4K running back that you feel good about, except for when there's an injury. It's easier to find someone's wide receiver too, and you can say, okay, I think this is the week this team goes off. Both wide receivers can get there. He's getting more volume. This makes sense. The other thing is that we just see a lot more spike weeks from wide receivers. It's easier, I should say, to go across the field and look at, like, okay, who has a chance to go off for 100 yards and a touchdown? And you could probably name maybe 12 running backs, 15 maybe, like max in a week. That's probably too generous. But you could look across and be like, there's a scenario that exists where 40 of these wide receivers, 50 of these wide receivers have a path to that. So you just have more of a player pool to get access to. And we know we want to be stacking as well, so you can kind of get your flex to stack if you need to, either in a game stack if you're bringing it back with a player or with your own quarterback.
And that's the tournament strategy you want. You're asking for variance. You're asking for your wide receiver that is going to be lower rostered and just saying, maybe there's correlation here. So stacking on somebody's wide receiver two is a great place to do at the flex, or the opposing wide receiver two. I found there's a lot of correlation. If you get a quarterback and you get him with his wide receiver one, then get the wide receiver two on the other team in the flex, and you can set yourself up really well. But also bonuses. Like, you know, there's going to be a lot more opportunities for these wide receivers to hit bonuses, and we love that. So I have an article coming out this next week about DraftKings bonuses and what that looked like over the last year and basically how that can change our strategy. So the flex is something we'll continue to talk about. It's in DFS, it feels ambiguous, and yet a lot of people end up playing running backs. Like 50% of the field, that's what they do, when we know it should be more wide receivers. So that's something definitely to think about. Next week, we will be discussing GPP strategies. So we are going to be putting on a different hat. We're going to be getting crazy. The goal of that exercise, the goal of that podcast, is to give you some ways to think about the game theory part of DFS. And so we've got some really good content coming out. Please go to the website, fantasyfootballers.com. Betts is coming out with stuff all the time. I have that bonus article coming out very soon. But any last words to give to our lovely, lovely listeners?
Don't forget about the Ultimate Draft Kit. Literally every day, I'm in there updating the injury report section, which is really a bummer for fantasy lineups, but really important to know. So check it out. It's in the Ultimate Draft Kit. Go get it today.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.thefantasyfootballers.com.